Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Reporter Telegram, Friday, October 21, 2022, Volume 94, Number 161, read by Leah. Stice, it's been a fantastic 10 years. Diamondback founder reflects on decade as public company, by Mella McKeown. Midland's Diamondback Energy has grown into an oil and gas producer closely watched by markets the world over, a company that this week celebrated the 10th anniversary of its initial public offering. It wasn't an easy path, according to Travis Stice, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, who credits the men and women of his organization for the company's success. When you pause for an event like the celebration we just had at the Horseshoe, you hear a lot about your reputation, and that's important because reputation is what others say you've done, he said. What I'm most proud of is the character of our company because it's our character and the way we pursue our values that defines who we are, he continued. It's been a fantastic 10 years, and it's been one of my greatest privileges to represent these employees as leader of the company, Stice said. He cited three milestone events that positively impacted the trajectory of the company. First, of course, was the initial public offering. The reason that is significant is that we had tried to sell the company about 6 months prior and were unsuccessful. No one wanted our assets, he recalled. He said the company had been marketed to 8 other producers and did not receive any bids. Having no other choice, his private equity backers had exhausted their intended investments in Diamondback and were unwilling to invest more. An IPO was decided upon, and Stice said it gave the company access to the capital it needed to grow. The second milestone, Stice said, was the decision to become an early adopter of horizontal drilling in the Midland Basin, where vertical wells were economic. The success of that program let the company grow its inventory materially, he said. It has also helped Diamondback grow production by a factor of 100, from under 4,000 barrels a day to 400,000 barrels a day when the Firebird deal is completed. And third was the creation of a brand new investor segment, a minerals company named Viper Energy Partners that unintentionally transformed the entire minerals space. Each event helped us grow the company from a capitalization of $500 million at the time of the IPO to over $30 billion today, Stice said. And thanks to several headline-grabbing acquisitions, including of Energen for almost $10 billion and its just-announced deal to acquire Firebird Energy, the company has gone from fewer than 25 employees at the time of the IPO to close to 1,000 by the end of this year. Stice has seen the public market change over the decades since Diamondback's IPO. The only reason to go public is to access capital, he explained, and today operators like Diamondback no longer need to access capital because they are focused on fiscal discipline and returning capital to shareholders. Even as it has made its acquisitions, he said Diamondback has focused on both execution and being a low-cost operator. In the commodities market, where you don't control the price of the commodity you produce, you better be good at both execution and being low cost, Stice said. Rather than growing production at a rapid clip as in the early days of the shale revolution, he said the Permian Basin today is all about the duration of its drilling inventory. As I look out over the horizon for the next 10 years, in addition to focusing on execution and being a low-cost operator, our shareholders are requiring a return on capital strategy and a greater emphasis on decarbonization, he said. He added, "We believe that the barrels produced in the Permian Basin and the barrels produced by Diamondback are among the world's most environmentally responsible and socially responsible barrels produced. We look forward to providing abundant and affordable energy to the world for decades to come." Women Share Tips for Professional Success by Ben Schaefer. A panel featuring successful women professionals was a part of the WTX Professional Women's Symposium held at the Bush Convention Center on Thursday. Laura Roman, partner at Weaver Accounting Firm, Kelly Spencer, acting superintendent at Midland ISD, and Julia Wright, senior vice president, general counsel, and secretary for Houston's Champion X, shared ways for area women to be successful in their professional lives. The three women spoke passionately about hard work, managing responsibility, and understanding personal brands and values, as well as diversity in the workplace, with the audience of professional women in Midland and surrounding areas. "For me, it's two things, really. I surround myself with great people," Spencer said about managing responsibility in a leadership position. "Great people at work, great people in my personal life, in order to manage those things." Secondly, Spencer said, she's learned to schedule her priorities. She said she schedules her priorities instead of allowing her schedule to drive her priorities professionally and personally. Roman claims that understanding one's personal values, especially for women, is vital to success in life. "Every day I wake up, how do I want to be perceived?" Roman asked. "If I know what my values are, I can then say, what do I uniquely bring to my workplace, to the organizations that I volunteer for, to my family?" Roman said a staff that collaborates and knows their personal values makes a great organization. Wright said she's known for getting things done, and that has become her personal brand. However, as a leader during her time at Champion X, her growth has involved challenging herself to expand her personal brand beyond her preceding reputation. "I've actually had to kind of introduce other areas of brand, so to speak, of what I would like to be known for," she said. Wright claims it's positive to maintain personal values and brands, but there is nothing wrong with wanting to be known for more. Wright continued to talk about the importance of creating a diverse workplace, as collaboration with employees of different backgrounds is useful in an organization. "If you can have differences of thought and background and perspective and views, you can solve problems faster," she said. Spencer said that diversity and inclusion in the public school system have allowed the district to better meet the needs of students. Roman said the most valuable asset of any business or organization is its people. "An organization unwilling to include individuals from differing backgrounds or perspectives is limiting its growth and ability," according to Roman. Paxton files lawsuit against Google in Midland. Petition lists county as venue of the suit, by Stuart Doreen. Attorney General Paxton has sued Google, filing a lawsuit in the 385th District Court in Midland. The lawsuit alleges that the tech giant has unlawfully captured and used the biometric data of millions of Texans without properly obtaining their informed consent to do so, according to a press release from the Attorney General's office. It also alleges that Google, in yet another violation of Texans' privacy, has collected millions of biometric identifiers, including voice prints and records of face geometry, from Texans through its products and services like Google Photos, Google Assistant, and Nest Hub Max. Google's exploitation of the personal information of Texans for its own commercial interests is a knowing violation of the state's Capture or Use of Biometric Identifier Act, according to the press release. Google's indiscriminate collection of the personal information of Texans, including very sensitive information like biometric identifiers, will not be tolerated, Paxson stated in the release. I will continue to fight big tech to ensure the privacy and security of all Texans. The plaintiff's petition also lists Midland County as the venue of the suit pursuant to Section 15.002A of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code because all or a substantial part of the events or omissions giving rise to these claims occurred in Midland County. Listed on the lawsuit as two of the attorneys submitting the petition are Bradley H. Baines and Matt Catalano of Cotton, Bledsoe, Tyhee, and Dawson of Midland. MISD, We Don't Collect Data About Students' Periods, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD reported Thursday that it doesn't collect information about girls' menstrual periods. The Reporter-Telegram asked Midland ISD officials about the topic following a Dallas Morning News report that stated most Texas school districts use the same annual physical form that prompted controversy in Florida. Questions include, when was your first menstrual period? When was your most recent? How many periods have you had in the last year? According to the Morning News report, the menstrual cycle questions have led to controversy in light of heightened concerns for transgender athletes and new laws criminalizing abortion. Several Texas school districts, including Austin, Dallas, Houston, and Fort Worth, use a form that mirrors Florida's form, except the females-only questions aren't indicated as optional, according to the Morning News report. A three-page physical form asks a series of questions about students' medical histories, the Morning News reported, such as whether they have asthma or a history of fainting, as well as optional questions pertaining to students' menstrual periods. The report also stated, like some Florida districts, Texas schools also use a similar but different third party to upload, organize, and store that information. A move that has heightened concern among parents, who argue this type of information should be kept between an athlete and her doctor. No, we do not collect this information, Midland ISD Public Information Officer Alana Ladd stated. MCTs of Men and Cars opens tonight by Morgan Taylor Thomas. An eye-opening conversation between childhood and adulthood, the coming-of-age production of Men and Cars, written by Jim Gowan, takes the Maybe Theater 2 stage for the first time this evening. Basing the story off his own relationship with his World War II veteran father, Gowan forms a true picture transitioning from a boy to a man. Through a series of life lessons, audience members watch Jim realize the attributes he once idolized in his father don't exist so prominently, in turn forcing Jim to recognize his own flaws. Conversations between the two and others in the safe space of a car allow Jim to take the journey necessary, ultimately creating a comedic piece full of sentiment, truth, and humor. At a glance, when, tonight through Sunday, October 28 and 29, November 4 and 5, and 11 and 12. Where, Midland Community Theater, Maybe Theater 2. Tickets, mctmidland.org. Cast, Jim, Daniel Collins, Dad, David Closel. Ensemble, Jerry Morgan, Brent Mueller, Brandon Thomason, Sarah January, Elijah Rivera, and Melanie Collins. Multi-week manhole replacement project to start on Wadley Avenue, by Midland Reporter Telegram. The City of Midland Utilities Department reported Thursday that it is scheduled to begin a manhole replacement project on Monday. The project consists of 7 manhole replacements on Wadley Avenue between North Garfield Street and I Street, the city reported. The project is expected to last 8 to 12 weeks. The first replacement, expected to last approximately 1 week, will limit some accessibility at the intersection of Garfield and Wadley, according to the city. Drivers are encouraged to avoid the intersection in favor of alternate routes. Local business access will be maintained at all times during the project, the city reported. Gas 24 cents higher than 1 month ago. Ben Schaefer. The gas price average in Midland and across the state dropped this week, AAA Texas reported. The statewide decrease in gas prices came after 2 weeks of increased prices because of the OPEC Plus announcement that they would be cutting production by 2 million barrels per day. However, prices have still increased compared to the end of September. AAA Texas reported Thursday that the average in Midland is up to $3.39 a gallon from $3.15 at the end of September. The price increase in Odessa was also 24 cents higher, from $3.11 to $3.35. The state average is up 15 cents from $3.11 to $3.26. Weekly decreases include 2 cents in Midland and Odessa and 6 cents across the state. AAA Texas reported the average in Midland and Odessa are the second and third highest of the 27 larger metropolitan areas AAA Texas surveys. The state average is the second lowest nationwide. This week, the White House said that the Strategic Petroleum Reserve would continue to release barrels of oil, AAA Texas reported Thursday. The exact pricing impact of the announcement remains uncertain, but it could keep fuel prices from increasing again in the near term. Across the region, prices include $3.25 in Abilene, down 7 cents, $3.27 in Lubbock, down 8 cents, $3.30 in Amarillo, down 7 cents, and $3.55 in El Paso, down 8 cents, and still the highest average across the state. The decrease this week in Midland-Odessa was the most insignificant statewide, along with College Station Bryan. The average in San Angelo dropped to $3.16 and sits just outside the top five of the least expensive gas price averages statewide. Number five is Laredo at $3.15. Drivers in McAllen, Brownsville, Harlington, and Corpus Christi were paying the lowest price statewide, $3.10. Last week, McAllen's average price was $3.19, which would not have landed them in the top five least expensive gas price averages statewide this week. Finally, prices in Midland are up 20 cents compared to the same time in 2021. The state average is up 29 cents. AAA Texas reported a national average of $3.78, which is 10 cents higher than 1 week ago and 59 cents higher than 1 year ago. Obituaries. Cora Markgraf. Cora Ann Markgraf passed from this life on October 15, 2022, to live forever with her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Cora was born on February 10, 1927, in Orange County, North Carolina, to Herbert and Lily Roach Bradshaw. Cora is survived by son Bill Markgraf and wife Connie, son Jim Markgraf and wife Stephanie, and daughter Debbie Kramer and husband Scott. She is also survived by grandchildren and great-grandchildren and sisters Betty Clark and Jane Sider. Cora was preceded in death by husband Bill Markgraf, parents Herbert and Lily Bradshaw, and brothers Louis, Brad, Bill, and Hendrick Bradshaw. The family will receive friends from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday, October 21, 2022, at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home in Midland. A memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. on Sunday, October 23, 2022, at Crestview Baptist Church in Midland, Texas. The family would like to express their gratitude to Legacy Ranch and Interim Hospice for their love and care. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Children's Ministry at Crestview Baptist Church, Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, October 21st, 2022. Natural gas prices to rebound. LNG export terminal fire big factor in depression. Natural gas prices have been tanking since a June 7th fire and explosion put the Freeport Liquefied Natural Gas Export Terminal on Quintana Island on the Texas Gulf Coast out of action and forced billions of cubic feet into storage. But repairs are progressing and the terminal will be online in November. Odessa oilman Kirk Edwards and spokesman for the Texas Pipeline Association, Panhandle Producers and Royalty Owners, and Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners say things are looking up just in time for a tough winter in Europe, one of the top LNG markets. The price was over $8 per million British thermal units before the blast and $5.364 Thursday. Quote, the main reason for the softening of natural gas prices was that Freeport, one of the biggest LNG exporters, had a fire 4 months ago that shut down their exporting capabilities, end quote, said Edwards, one of the largest gas producers in the panhandle. Quote, they'd been exporting 2 billion cubic feet a day. So the gas we normally would have been exporting to Europe has been going into storage, 240 billion cubic feet since the fire, end quote. 1,000 cubic feet is roughly equivalent to a million BTU. Edwards said another negative event was the September 26th undersea sabotage explosions of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines between Russia and Germany. Quote, I think that once Freeport comes back and Europe starts getting the majority of gas produced in this country, we will see some very positive prices, end quote, he said. Quote, you have to realize, too, that LNG prices in Europe are roughly $60 per million BTU, end quote. Edwards said Europe, quote, is still reeling, end quote, from the disabling of the Nord Streams. Quote, somebody went down under several hundred feet of water and blew them up, end quote, he said. Quote, it was probably Russia because it adds more uncertainty to natural gas prices. If we get a cold winter, there will be another big upward pressure for natural gas prices, and with Freeport coming back on, I'm very bullish for the industry, end quote. TPA President Thur Cannon said it is, quote, almost impossible to predict what natural gas pricing will do, especially with so many monumental factors affecting the market, including the war in Ukraine. We do know Kinder Morgan is expanding the Permian Highway pipeline to add an additional 1.2 billion cubic feet per day in takeaway capacity from the Permian Basin, end quote, Cannon said from Austin. Quote, this is expected to be completed by fourth quarter of 2023. In addition, Whitewater, EnLink Midstream, Devon Energy, and MPLX LP are planning the Matterhorn Express for the third quarter of 2024, which will transport up to 2.5 BCF of natural gas from the Waha Gas Hub near Koyanosa, 60 miles southwest of Odessa, to Katy. There are several other pipeline ventures planned as well, end quote. Cannon said the projects, quote, are vital to the state of Texas with its rapidly growing population and number of energy-intense businesses coming here. It's imperative that we increase our infrastructure to meet the growing demands of the state, end quote, he said. PPRO President Judy Stark agreed that conditions are improving. Quote, I think Europe is likely to have enough supplies of LNG without Russia, end quote, Stark said from Amarillo. Quote, the addition of more infrastructure going to the Gulf Coast will benefit not only the U.S., but also the world with cheaper, more reliable, abundant fuel sources, end quote. TIPRO President Ed Longenecker said energy markets, quote, are subject to the laws of supply and demand just like any other market. Over the past few months, we've witnessed an artificial compression of supply in both oil and natural gas, thanks to OPEC's oil output cuts and the flow of Russian natural gas to Europe coming to a trickle, end quote, Longenecker said from Austin. Quote, as winter sets in and temperatures drop, energy demand will increase, and with shortened supply and high demand come higher prices. However, good energy policy from the U.S. focused on increasing the supply of oil and gas could lessen the shock of higher prices, end quote. He said continued investments in energy infrastructure like LNG export terminals and refineries are essential to meeting global energy needs. Quote, new infrastructure projects are not only necessary for our state, they also benefit communities beyond Texas borders and ensure energy security and reliability for decades to come, end quote, Longenecker said. Citing the U.S. Energy Information Administration, he said five new pipeline projects will increase the basin's gas takeaway capacity by a combined 4.18 billion cubic feet per day over the next 2 years. Quote, this includes the Matterhorn Energy Pipeline, a 580-mile line that will transport natural gas from the Permian Basin to Katy outside of Houston, end quote, Longenecker said. Quote, once completed, the Matterhorn Express will transport up to 2.5 billion cubic feet of natural gas per day, the equivalent of supplying heat to at least 2 million homes every day, end quote. Longenecker said the EIA predicts America will increase its LNG exports to 12.34 billion cubic feet per day next year, leading the world. Third future goes for work-life balance. Higher teacher salaries and allowing for a work-life balance has enabled Third Future schools to better recruit and retain teachers and help curb teacher burnout. Third Future operates Ector College Prep Middle School in Odessa and Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Elementary in Midland. On the average, Third Future schools' teacher salaries are $74,000 a year. They have eliminated teacher tasks like grading papers and lesson planning, and they have teacher apprentice positions. These are people who can step in if there is a vacancy to prevent any loss of learning. Third Future CEO Mike Miles said in a news release that they believe the workforce is changing and that teachers will increasingly demand better work-life balance. Quote, if we want to be competitive as a profession, then we cannot expect teachers to work 10 to 12 hour days, end quote, Miles said in a news release. Lesson plans and visual presentations are created by curriculum experts and provided to the teacher. Support personnel, called learning coaches, take copies of assignments and activities to the copy center and return them to the classroom. Learning coaches also grade papers, the release said. Teachers only grade, quote, demonstrations of learning, end quote, during class. They do not grade papers outside of class. Learning coaches monitor students at lunch and during most of the day. Teachers have only 1 hour of duty each week. And Miles said he expects TFS to eliminate even that amount of duty next year. Teachers leave at 4:15 p.m. each day, and they are done with no lessons to plan, no papers to grade, no documents to copy, and no parent phone calls to make. Education is Miles' third career. He said he was previously an Army officer and a diplomat. Miles was superintendent of Dallas ISD and the superintendent of Harrison School District in Colorado Springs. Third Future operates in Texas and Colorado. Quote, we think that this generation is looking for better work-life balance. I think COVID only accentuated it, but didn't spark it, and it's not the cause of it. But I think the last 2 years we've seen more and more people say staying at home was a great thing. I need that balance, end quote, Miles said. It takes so long to earn a professional wage, and starting salaries in education tend to be low. People don't necessarily want to wait around for those higher salaries. Quote, and then as you get more experience in the profession, yes, you get a better wage. We think that's changing. We think teachers no longer want to wait to get that $550 every year for another year of experience, end quote, Miles said. Quote, depending on the position, the salary range changes. Even at 0 years of experience, our starting salaries are so much higher than ECISD, end quote, Miles said. Third Future operates schools in Odessa, Midland, Austin, and Colorado. Quote, that workforce notion that I have to work 15, 20 years to get a good salary. Well, you can see they don't in Third Future schools. They're going to get a pretty good salary pretty much from the start, end quote, Miles said. The elementary teachers are paid a little less, and the salaries vary according to city. Quote, we're trying to professionalize the teaching role, which means that we are trying to make sure that teachers' roles is very much defined as a great instructor and then eliminate everything else. So they don't handle discipline. The lesson plans are made for them. Lesson plans and assignments, the PowerPoint of the day of the demonstration of learning, the assignments, the activities, the answer keys, end quote, Miles said. Quote, they don't make copies. Teachers don't make copies. They don't grade papers outside of the classroom. They grade the demonstration of learning in class. After class, they don't have any papers to grade. They still have duty one time a week, and hopefully next year we'll be able to get rid of that. But it does cost money because somebody has to do duty because we're open at 6:30. If we weren't open at 6:30, might be a little bit different. But since we're open at 6:30 and we close at 5, we have to have some people watching, end quote, Miles said. He added that about 12% of the district's teacher salary budget is usually for electives because every student gets an elective every day. Quote, that's 1/6 of your costs easily. We engage community consultants for a lot of our electives and what we call dyads. So not only does a kid get an elective every day, 1 hour a day, they also, twice a week, 90 minutes each time, get a dyad course. Many of our elective teachers are community consultants because the two are kind of mixed together, end quote, Miles said. Quote, in other words, if we have a dance consultant that could be an elective class, so instead of hiring elected teachers to do dance, we hire a community consultant to do dance. The only difference is the community consultants are on a 1099. They're not employees. They don't get benefits. They get $30 an hour, end quote, Miles said. They also use instructors from Third Future Teacher Corps. There are a handful at Ector. Quote, we paid them $75,000 plus a $10,000 bonus, $85,000 to come to Ector for 1 year. At the end of that year, if they're proficient, they can go anywhere in the network where we have a vacancy, end quote, Miles said. The Permian Basin has always had a teacher shortage, even before COVID. So recruiting people from Colorado Springs or even Dallas, for example, is tougher. Quote, I don't want to diss the community. People like what they like. This is home for a lot of people, and they like their home. I'm not dissing their home, but me personally, I like Colorado Springs. I like the forest, I like the mountains, I like the rivers, and I like the lakes. And none of that is here, so you'd have to incentivize me to come out here. Others, you might not have to, end quote, Miles said. Local news roundup. Two arrested on felony drug charges. Two men are facing felony drug charges after Odessa detectives found 141 grams of methamphetamine, 34 grams of cocaine, 23 grams of THC, and more than 5 ounces of marijuana in an Odessa motel room. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives received information Anthony Sweets Lee and Leroy Webb were selling meth out of a room at the Baymont Inn and Suites on East Highway 80. On Tuesday, detectives saw what they believed to be a narcotics transaction between Lee and Webb and made contact with them, the report stated. According to the report, Lee admitted without prompting he had meth in his pocket, and detectives obtained a search warrant for his room. In addition to the drugs found in Lee's room, they found digital scales and a large amount of currency on his person, the report stated. Lee confessed the drugs in his room were his and that he sells narcotics in various quantities, and Webb admitted he was the, quote, middleman, end quote, for Lee, according to the report. Lee was arrested on suspicion of 3 counts of manufacture delivery of a controlled substance and delivery of marijuana. Webb was arrested on suspicion of delivery of a controlled substance. Most of the drug charges are first-degree felonies punishable by 5 years to life in prison. Lee and Webb remain in the Ector County Jail on bonds totaling $194,000 and $60,000, respectively. Two sixth graders arrested. ECISD police on Thursday received a report of a shooting threat at Wilson and Young Middle School. Upon investigation, officers discovered the threat was made Wednesday when two sixth-grade boys told others in the cafeteria that they had a gun in their backpack. Both boys admitted to making the statement, and both were arrested Thursday for the Class A misdemeanor threat or exhibition of weapon on school grounds or bus. Quote, as we continue to say, school and school district leaders will take seriously any mention of school violence. If found to be true, students will be charged criminally as well as receive school discipline. Thank you to all students, families, and staff members who report instances like this. It takes everyone in our community working together to ensure the safety of our schools, end quote, a district news release said. Odessa man arrested for aggravated sexual assault of a child. An Odessa man was arrested Wednesday after two girls, ages 10 and 12, prompted an investigation to be launched in August by alleging he'd inappropriately touched them on multiple occasions. Demetria Lujan, 18, was booked into the Ector County Jail on 1 count of aggravated sexual assault of a child, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison. According to an Odessa Police Department report, Child Protective Service investigators informed detectives a 12-year-old girl said she'd been molested. During the girl's forensic interview at Harmony Home in late August, the child said Lujan had repeatedly grabbed her buttocks and breasts while playing, and she knew the same thing had happened to a 10-year-old girl, the report stated. When the 10-year-old was interviewed in late September, she said Lujan often touched her buttocks and breasts while throwing her up in the air. She also said about a year prior, Lujan digitally penetrated her vagina after grabbing her in his hallway, causing her to be traumatized, scared, and in pain, the report stated. When interviewed Tuesday, Lujan admitted to all of the allegations made by the girls, but said every incident was an accident. Lujan remained in the Ector County Jail Thursday afternoon. No bond had yet been set. The Human Bean to host Coffee for a Cure. All Human Bean locations in the Permian Basin today will donate 100% of sales to the Medical Center Health System as part of their Coffee for a Cure event. The money raised will go directly to help support breast cancer health at MCH through the Breast Cancer Navigation Program. Customers can contribute by visiting any Human Bean locations in Odessa and Midland. The Human Bean has donated more than $16,000 to breast cancer health efforts since 2018. Permian Basin Recycle Fashion Show to take place. This week, designers from all over the area will show off their fashion skills as models will take the runway, clad in dresses made from recyclable materials in the annual Permian Basin Recycle Fashion Show. The event is scheduled for 6 p.m. today at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. This will be the seventh year for the event, put on by Keep Odessa Beautiful. Quote, "We're very excited," end quote, Executive Director of Keep Odessa Beautiful, Claudia Ortega, said. Quote, "We're very thrilled. We have 31 designers this year and 32 designs. We can't wait to see what they come up with this year. It's always something different. I always think I've seen it all, but then the year comes and something new comes along and I'm surprised," end quote. Each year, the designers bring different looks and styles to the Recycle Fashion Show. The message of the show remains the same about the importance of reusing materials and saving the environment. The designers have a list of criteria they have to meet. The main thing is that at least 50% of the outfits have to be made of recycled materials. Quote, "Of course it can be more," end quote, Ortega said. Quote, "But it's a minimum of 50%. So what they do is they create a design out of those materials and they model it. The important thing is to raise awareness of the importance of reducing waste in our community," end quote. Some examples include plastic bags, bottles, soda cans or caps, water bottles, and newspapers. Quote, "They even use the plastic medicine bottles as well as cardboard," end quote, Ortega said. Quote, "Anything you can think of, even ties, they've used those to make a skirt before," end quote. This year's theme is, quote, "Denim and diamonds," end quote. Last year, about $17,000 was raised from the fashion show, and Ortega is hopeful that they'll raise twice as much this year. The event has grown over the years, being originally held at the Ector County Coliseum in its early years. Quote, "From there, we made it our signature fundraiser and moved it to the Copper Rose Building," end quote, Ortega said. Quote, "We had it there for 3 years, but then it got so big because we had so many participants, so we moved it to the Marriott," end quote. Last year's event was not held in person due to the pandemic, so it was recorded instead. This year's event returns to an in-person setting. Quote, "We recorded the actual show to keep everyone safe," end quote, Ortega said of last year's show. Quote, "But it has grown so much that we had to move it out of those places. We saw how people responded. It's fun to see the talent we have in our community, and when you talk to those participants, their motivation behind it is amazing. It's good to hear their stories and motivations behind doing this event," end quote. One of the fashion designers that takes part in the Recycle Fashion Show each year is Olivia Benavides and her family. Benavides has been involved with the show for about 5 years now. Quote, "It's just a really fun thing to do with the family," end quote, Benavides said. Quote, "We like making and designing the dresses and reusing stuff. I love watching how the other people design stuff and create new things with recycled stuff," end quote. Helping her each year is her mother, Kelly Benavides, and sister, Rianne Benavides. Quote, "Last year's design, we used a lot of plastic products on the dress," end quote, Olivia said. Quote, "We kind of made it look like a rainbow to make a love is love theme and to reuse and recycle all the plastic in the ocean. All the McDonald's toys and all the plastic toys that you can find that people throw away, there's so much of it. We just glued so much of it onto the dress. It also included plastic Tide bottles, soap bottles, and shampoo bottles," end quote. While Olivia didn't want to give anything away about this year's design, she said the message remains the same. Quote, "This year we want to spread awareness of how important it is to reuse things as well," end quote, Olivia said. Quote, "Reusing things is something that should come before recycling. It's using Earth's valuable resources to recycle things, and I want people to know that it's fine to shop at thrift stores and create their own costumes for Halloween," end quote. For more information about the event, go to tinyurl.com/YE2765W7. In time for Halloween. Dracula to take the globe stage. In honor of Halloween, Odessa College will stage the play Dracula at the Globe Theater. Show dates are October 28th and 29th at 7 p.m., a 10 p.m. Halloween show October 31st, 7 p.m. November 4th and 2 p.m. November 5th. There have been many versions of Dracula over the years, but director of theater Josh Rapp said this one is very true to the novel. Quote, there are some variations to it. I would say that it's really a lovely adaptation because the people who don't know Dracula will see it play for the first time and really enjoy it, end quote, Rapp said. He added that those who have read the novel will see their favorite moments highlighted in, quote, really nice ways, end quote. Quote, it follows Bram Stoker's Dracula pretty closely, and it's the same plot, and it highlights some of the same heightened points, but it also progresses and moves differently, end quote, Rapp said. The play has a cast of 15. The way it is structured is there is a principal cast and then an ensemble cast that plays all the other parts. Quote, it's an ensemble-based show, end quote, Rapp said. He added that there's been a lot of hype about people seeing the show. Quote, a lot of my actors, some of them are really excited about it. The production staff were excited, and then some of my younger cast was like, oh, this is cool, what's it about? End quote, Rapp said. He added that if this was their first experience with Dracula, what better way to experience it? Quote, we did a lot of script work. We did a lot of, like, vampire mythology where I had to research some of Bram's life. I had them watch some weird films like The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. Once they started to get a handle on it, they seemed to really enjoy it, which was exciting for me because I remember the MGM films and all the monster films of the period, and I remember how much excitement it was when I first discovered them, end quote, Rapp said. Quote, it was kind of fun to watch my cast navigate the same experience, to watch them look through Dracula, experience Bram Stoker's writing for the first time, kind of start to learn the mythos, end quote, and realize it was a neat subgenre, but also a classic. Quote, I think what is really great about this play, it's very accessible to a classic that's been out for a long time. It still tells the same story, still has the same integrity, but is modernized in a way that makes it way more accessible, end quote, Rapp said. The play is still set in 1897 in the same setting. Quote, it hops between London and Transylvania, but the dialogue is modern English. It's modernized. That was the thing that appealed to me about this script a lot, is that previous iterations of the script, they stick more traditionally to the writing. They're a little more thrillers, whereas this production is way more visceral. So I'll say that it's a more accessible and exciting and visually stimulating production, end quote, Rapp said. Theater technical director Amanda Klipsch-Fakwe said it was difficult to put together the costumes and sets. Quote, it's not like it's just 15 costumes. It's like 30 to 45 costumes that she's having to build and make work for the period and the non-periodness. And then, scenically, it was tough because it jumps back and forth between Transylvania and London and multiple places in both locations very quickly, end quote, Klipsch-Fakwe said. Quote, you have flashes between those locations, end quote. Quote, and sometimes at the same time, end quote, Rapp said. Rapp added. Quote, so we had to make a set that would accommodate them being in multiple locations at the same time, as well as different times, being able to isolate them and include everyone, end quote, Klipsch-Fakwe said. When interviewed, they were in week 4 of rehearsals. Quote, I would say something that's really amazing about this cast is there are a lot of risk takers. There's a certain level of weirdness when you say, okay, there's going to be vampires and you're going to be in these costumes, end quote, Rapp said. He added that he often has to ask the cast to imagine there are lights, sound, stage blood, and you're in costume. Quote, you have to get the right amount of people that can go, okay, cool, and then start playing with things that aren't really there until they're there. This cast has been really good about being fearless in that way, which is the best gift any director could ask for, end quote, Rapp said. Klipsch-Fakwe said there is a big shift at intermission where they change over two of their main playing spaces to be different. Quote, we have it to where, with each act, there are about 6 playing spaces on the stage, any of which can be used at a time. Then we have a lot of scenery on wheels that comes in and out and a lot of lighting effects to help isolate and change different rooms to look like different things, end quote, Klipsch-Fakwe added. Their last production of The Glass Menagerie was a good starting point. Rapp said they were able to get a better handle on the talent pool, and he added that the support they have received from OC has helped as well. Quote, our ambition is to keep growing and do bigger things. We're just learning every day that we can do more because of the support system behind us, end quote, Rapp said. He added that there are returning players cast in Dracula that people who saw Glass Menagerie will recognize. There also is OC staff, new students, high school students, and alumni, among others. This semester, Rapp said, he has a full run. They like to have their shows designed and ready to go so that they can build it early, which creates less stress. Klipsch Fekwe was pregnant and due about mid-October. Rapp said, "That was a very important consideration, so we wanted to give a shout-out to the assistant technical director, Nathaniel Jordan." Quote, "He's been absolutely incredible," end quote, Rapp said. The show is free for faculty and students. Those students don't have to be OC students. General admission tickets are $15, and there is a pay-what-you-can option. Quote, "If $15 is standing between you and seeing the shows, just pay what you can. $1 is fine. You do have to have a ticket," end quote, Rapp said. Quote, "You have to go to Eventbrite and get a ticket. You can go to Eventbrite searches. You can go to the OC website on the main page on the banner. You can find it. You can find a poster and scan a QR code. It's on our Facebook, but you do have to have a ticket that can get scanned at the door just because of the number of seatings. We're anticipating a pretty good house," end quote. If you go. What? Dracula. When? 7 p.m. October 28th and October 29th, 10 p.m. October 31st, 7 p.m. November 4th, 2 p.m. November 5th. Where? Globe Theater. Where to purchase tickets? tinyurl.com/yrw2cz2y. OC Fall Choir Concert features new vocal ensemble. OC Fall Choir Concert features new vocal ensemble. The Odessa College Music Program will present the OCA Capella Choir and Vocal Ensemble in its fall concert at 7 p.m. today. The concert will be in the Jack Rogers Auditorium of the Jack Rogers Fine Arts Building on the OC campus. The concert will include varied composers' works, chosen specifically to evoke a sentimental feeling of coming home after a long journey, and a new vocal ensemble performing songs by contemporary artists will be featured in the concert. The public is welcome, and admission is free. Of Men and Cars to Drive In at MCT. If you want to have an intimate or meaningful conversation with a man, put him in a car. In the new play at Midland Community Theater titled Of Men and Cars, the show chronicles the life of a man and his World War II veteran father. As a child, the lead character Jim thought his father was amazing, but as he grew up, he realized he was not as amazing as he thought. In learning the human and fallible parts of his father, Jim also finds the very human and fallible parts in himself. The new show will open at 7:30 p.m. today at Midland Community Theater, with 8 total shows. All performances will take place at the Maybe Theater 2 at Midland Community Theater. The play was written by Jim Gogan. The show, which is a father-son relationship viewed through the window of the family car, was the winner of Future Fest back in 2018, which is an annual festival of new plays presented by the Dayton Playhouse in Dayton, Ohio. Directing this play at MCT is Ben Spencer. Quote, "This group has been an amazing group of people," end quote, Spencer said of his cast. Quote, "They've jumped headlong into realizing some characters that are important to Jim's life. It's an autobiography in such that Jim is remembering the memories, and there's nostalgia about it. One of the things that I wanted my actors to do is understand that memories are a mixture of realism and fantasy. The actors have done an amazing job of creating that concoction," end quote. Playing the role of Jim is MCT regular Daniel Collins. Quote, "Jim is the narrator and the man that you're seeing all the memories through," end quote, Collins said. Quote, "He is the vehicle for which this play exists as you watch his relationship with his dad evolve," end quote. Collins talked about what he likes about playing Jim. Quote, "He knows who he is, and that is helped and hindered by the other relationships with his dad," end quote, Collins said. Quote, "You see him become his own man," end quote. Collins has done around 50 shows at MCT. Playing the role of the father is David Closel. The rest of the cast includes Jerry Morgan, Brent Mueller, Brandon Thomason, Sarah January, Elijah Rivera, and Melanie Collins. For January, this will be her second time performing on stage at MCT. Quote, "My favorite part about doing this production is being with friends," end quote, January said. Quote, "Ben, Daniel, and I are longtime friends from the theater. I started backstage, and now they dragged me on stage," end quote. January is part of the ensemble and plays 3 different characters, including the girl next door, a college girl, and an L.A. girl. Quote, "It's got a very bipolar feeling, playing 3 different characters, because I'm going from a very feminine 40-year-old to a very boisterous and outspoken young woman in L.A., end quote, January said. Quote, "It's interesting because you don't have much information on each character. You have to build something out of nothing," end quote. January was also involved in Trailer Park Musical back in 2019 at MCT. quote, "I think my favorite part is getting to know all the characters and getting to know all the people that play them," end quote, January said of the play. Quote, "This is a hardworking cast that really likes the craft of theater and exploring human emotion," end quote. One of the challenging aspects about the play, according to Spencer, is that it's a multi-location play. Quote, "Because it's all existing in a headspace, the actors have to create those locations, and we as a technical crew have to create those locations too. So it means that they have to behave as if they are in the middle of February, and light it as if it's in the middle of February, and make sounds as if it's in the middle of February, so that we don't create a used car lot and then move immediately to a baseball field," end quote, Spencer said. The cast and crew have been busy rehearsing for about 7 weeks now and are eager to finally perform in front of an audience. Quote, "It's always the next organic step that you do in which you rehearse the show and organically leads to the culmination of producing it," end quote, Spencer said. Quote, "Right now, the actors are ready for an audience. They need that. They crave that energy in which the symbiotic relationship between art and consumer builds, and they finally get to enjoy what it's like to produce this for the audience in which it was written," end quote. The show will wrap up with a 7:30 p.m. performance on November 12th. For more information about the play, visit tinyurl.com/4bzhv6s6. Death Notice. Ricardo Ayala Aylman. Lubbock. Ricardo Ayala Aylman, 53, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 16th, 2022, in Lubbock. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, October 22nd, 2022, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Pastor Ben Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, October 15, 2022. Viewpoints. Questions for candidates. It appears one of the greatest threats to the quality of life in Midland is the lack of available workforce. The lack of customer service might even be a reason fewer stores, restaurants, etc. put Midland on their map of places to open a location. Is there anything the City of Midland can do here? Jim Garrity, City District 4 candidate. Solid leadership is important to solving Midland's staffing issue. Employee shortages that were unique to Midland and the Permian Basin are no longer a regional issue, but a national issue. After COVID, with people returning to the workforce, many have changed their priorities and reevaluated life goals. In the oil field, we see how companies are struggling to get out-of-town folks laid off in 2020 to come back to the smell of money in 2022. People may have decided they do not want to commute from, say, Wisconsin to Midland for the lure of good money. Instead, they want to be home with family and keep the lower-paying job in their hometown. As an employer of hundreds in the restaurant business, we deal with a higher turnover rate than most industries. During the last oil boom, we struggled with staffing. It hurt our internal metrics of providing a great product delivered in a timely manner. Against our competitors, though, we were head and shoulders above them in our service times. What we learned was that well-managed locations had better staffing and retention. When the bust cycle reared its ugly head, we made changes in our above-store supervision, seeking people who had a strong leadership style that understood the new young adults coming into the workforce. Lead by example is the path to success. We successfully focused on changes in management in our underperforming locations and worked at hiring and training to start the new hires on a more successful path with us. Good leadership combined with meeting the personal needs and desires of young people is key to help a business in this current employment climate to succeed. I visited with a friend who is in the retail industry. They have dozens of locations, and he said exactly the same thing. The stores well-led are the best-staffed locations. The store managers with poor leadership skills are the ones who can't, won't hire, work their team to exhaustion, and find themselves working more hours than they should. Once burnout hits, failure strikes. As a consumer, we gravitate to the food locations and retail stores that are the best staffed. Chick-fil-A is a good example. Individually owned store franchisees work their stores, motivate their crews, and lead by example. And consumers will line up twice around the building to get a sandwich. The public sector can learn from the private sector. And that is the key to city government. Like the private sector, government is an employer that provides decent pay and benefits. Yet it has a similar struggle with employment, hiring, and retention. You can shout from the mountaintops the city is hiring. You can offer great pay and benefits. But in today's workforce, leadership by example is the biggest key to success. Whether it is a mechanic, road maintenance, park maintenance, office worker, police officer, or fireman, they want to be well-led, treated fairly, and be able to have their personal time. Leaders who do some of the heavy lifting and are willing to work side by side make the biggest difference. As new generations enter the workforce, their expectations are different. As a baby boomer, my work experiences were different. More people were looking for work than there were jobs. If you found a job, you hung on to it even if you didn't like it. Today, it is the opposite. People have choices on where they want to work and what they want to do in life. Knowing that and having a good leader in place will be the magic formula for a successful business or city department. Brands hesitate to come purely for business reasons. Regarding new brands coming to the market, it always comes down to risk versus reward and capital. In the restaurant business, I can see all the many brands that have entered the market in my 23 years as owner of Domino's. While consumers may be anxious for their favorite out-of-town brand to come to Midland, there are some things folks need to know. Lots of people say they would love a Joe's Crab Shack or a Cheesecake Factory to open here. My guess would be that it is a $3 million to $5 million build, a significant investment. And unfortunately, those particular brands are not in good financial health to expand quickly or with a lot of potential risk. Part of their calculus is labor cost and staffing. I am sure they have their fair share of good leadership managers in the system, but they have to decide if the risk is worth the reward. Some of the most desired brands like Papa Do's or In-N-Out have a geographical strategy for their business, and Midland may be in the plan or it may not be in the plan. As a brand, you have to be able to support the location with supply chain and upper management. We have seen some new brands recently enter the market, and they are more likely to be fast food due to lower investment cost to build and operate. With large full-service restaurants, we see them using existing space that was empty, like Chewy's, to keep their construction costs down. The successful arrivals will look at Midland as I did in 1999. We are the tall city, and the sky is the limit.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.